Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, welcome to Life's a Pitch. My name is Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Tony Evans of the Evening Standard and Tom Hopkinson of The People. Big Sam's apparently into meditation. He'll need to be chilled on Wednesday night, beat Everton, and Sunderland will stay up. Newcastle and Norwich will go down. No great surprise there, but somehow Man City might fail to qualify for the Champions League. Join us on a search for context. But first, Sunderland. He's done it again, hasn't he?
Well, he has, and that's remarkable, really, because they did look dead and buried. I mean, Defoe's goals have done a lot to keep them up. But it's amazing. Allardyce has never gone down, and it looks like he's the unsinkable Sam.
The unsinkable Sam. Also, he saved himself and saved the club probably in January. That's the key, isn't it? Actually strengthening from position a weakness, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, what was fascinating, I mean, I remember speaking to him in press conferences after games just before Christmas, and he was almost at his wit's end with the players. It was like he'd given everyone in the squad, after coming in, and given everyone a chance to go out there and show him that they deserve to be there. And of course, we all know that Big Sam is excellent in the transfer market. His contacts have always been superb, haven't they? And he seems to have pulled off. I mean, bringing in Wahbi Khazri was a masterstroke in the end, even though he hasn't been brilliant all the time since he's come in, but he's been excellent in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, he's done a great job. I think Kirchhoff as well. I mean, I remember seeing him at Tottenham.
Well, we were there, weren't we?
And it was laughable. You know, this was a kid who'd come from Bayern Munich, and you're expecting big things of him. Came on in the centre of defence, and he was woeful. But credit to Big Sam again, because he's moved him into midfield, that defensive role, and alongside Lee Catamole, who I think deserves an extraordinary amount of credit for the turnaround at Sunderland in recent weeks. They've all merged together, and yeah, that January signing spree has worked very well for him.
One of the players who really does stand out for me, although he's not a regular, is Duncan Watmore. Now, there's someone who's actually come into football from the other side, as it were, you know, get his first-class honours degree, having been kicked out of Manchester United very early, build his career again at Altrincham. Now, I always think when he comes on, he just gives them that extra spark in the last 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah, he's quick, he's direct. You know, he causes havoc, doesn't he? And, you know, it changes the game. You know, it's, when you've got someone with his pace, it takes defences out of shape. And so, yeah, he's made a massive impact. Even so, you look at the signings, despite the signings and despite everything, they still look like a team that were going to go down, and not, you know, they've just, Allardyce has organised them in a way that I didn't think it was possible.
And I think what's interesting with Watmore as well, but given his academic background and also his dad being in football administration, you know, he's almost viewed as he's not your typical footballer at all, is he? I know Allardyce calls him his roadrunner, but he has this sort of air of a lad who almost doesn't fit in with the rest of the team, and yet everyone seems to love him.
But there is this great sort of fallacy that all footballers are thick. Now, you know, you cannot play a game at this level when you are, you know, it's not to do with intellectual achievement. It's actually having the brain.
Football intelligence, yeah, isn't it, though, as well? You know, I mean, we speak to however many players a season, don't we? And, you know, on the whole, they can all hold a perfectly normal conversation with you. And at times, you know, very intelligent. So it is laughable to say that there is a stereotype.
It's very much, you know, the world they're living in doesn't, you know, sort of lend itself to to, you know, reading philosophy and all that sort of thing. So you're never going to get a conversation like that with them. But they're bright enough, you know, there's very few of them. Like across, you know, sort of any sort of society, there's very few people you think, he's really thick.
Mm-hmm. We are making, the assumption that Everton aren't going to put up much resistance?
Well, I was at Leicester over the weekend and there was absolutely no resistance from them there. I mean, quite a shocking performance from Everton, barring that moment from Morales when he scored a very good goal. But they don't seem to be offering anything for Martinez at the moment. It looks like a dressing room that isn't playing for the manager, and I would expect Sunderland, given everything they're fighting for, I would expect them to go and pick up a good result.
What about the Newcastle situation, Tony? You know Rafa. He's organised them, but that's not enough.
Yeah, there's not enough quality there. I think when he got to St James's Park, he was shocked because, like all managers, he thinks, I'll go in and, the professional footballers at the top flight, I'll be able to organise them. There'll be enough talent there. There wasn't. They missed, five good chances at Villa Park, the only team not to beat Villa all season, and it was a really poor performance. I think he was absolutely he was disconsolate afterwards, and that won't continue. If Sunderland win, he'll be looking for another job in the summer.
You think he'll leave? Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, without a doubt, he'll be gone if Newcastle go down.
Can Newcastle ever move forward while Mike Ashley is the owner?
I don't see why not. I mean, he showed ambition in bringing Rafa Benitez in. We all know now, hindsight's a great thing, we all know now if he'd done it a couple of months earlier, there is a chance that Rafa would have got him out of the mire. So, I think he has to be willing to show that sort of endeavour again and maybe bring in a manager who will do the same sort of job that Rafa's done. Obviously, he's not going to be that sort of level, but I don't see any reason why Ashley can't turn it around, but he just has to invest.
I think Newcastle's in a really dangerous situation now. If there's any year not to go down, it's this one. The difference in the finances are absolutely stunning. The team that finishes bottom next year will get in the region of £100 million. So Ashley's cash cow has gone down, and I think it'll be a real struggle for them to get back up. I think they've got a window of a year to get up, because after that you're going to get the relegated teams are going to have bigger parachute payments, and we're going to start seeing yo-yo teams. I think Newcastle have got a big
and they're talking about with a wage bill of about 70 million, there aren't many relegation clauses in the contracts, are there?
No, I think Townsend's got one, hasn't he? I think he's got an £8 million clause, but John Joe Shelby has already said, he said a few weeks ago, didn't he, that he would be willing to stay at the club.
He's been a disaster so far.
Yeah, he hasn't been the signing that everyone expected him to be, has he? Funnily enough, in the Championship, he might actually be perfect for them down there, because he is, we all know when his head's on his game, he is a very good footballer. But this summer is absolutely huge for Mike Ashley. I mean, everything that's gone in the past for him with Newcastle United and with the fans, he's the recruitment for him, for Lee Charnley and everyone who is involved in the running of that club. They have to get the appointment of the next manager absolutely bang on, because as Tony says, it is that window of year. But of course, last time they were relegated, they came straight back at the first attempt, and if they can hold on to perhaps five or so of those players that they've got now, there is the basis of a side that has got what it takes to get out of the Championship.
It's a great truism, isn't it? If you've got Championship players, you're going to end up in the Championship. And I suppose you could refer that to what's gone on at Norwich.
Well, yeah, I mean, Norwich remind me a little bit of Burnley a couple of years ago. They come up, they didn't have enough quality, they've gone back down. I think you could see there wasn't enough goals in that side, there wasn't enough belief in that side. They've got into leading positions quite a few games during the season and lost, and funnily enough, I think they'll be better for their experience in the Premier League, and they might do a Burnley and come back up. I think they'll keep faith with Alex Neil, and I think they should do, because he has been fantastic throughout his career, and I think they've got a good opportunity to, unlike Newcastle, to come right back up and then consolidate once they get up.
I think what Neil's learnt this season, he was quite outspoken after the weekend, wasn't he?
Sense that the dam burst there, didn't it? It had been cracked, and then the frustration
came out. Yeah, but he said they didn't learn from the mistakes of the last time they were promoted, when they didn't recruit well enough, and they didn't recruit well enough this time around. I actually thought Stephen Naismith would be a very good signing for them, but it hasn't worked out for him there. But as you say, I think Alex Neil, out of everyone at Norwich, will be the one who really benefits. So I hope they give him a year to try to get them back up again.
But the initial signs aren't great. We're speaking here on Monday, and David McNally, the chief executive, has just announced he's resigning. It's
very
in flux,
bizarre,
isn't it?
Because he announced he was resigning, then there was a U-turn, and no one seems to quite know what's going on up there. But again, whether that's just initial 24 hours, 48 hours, the kind of Let's throw everything up in the air and see where it lands. I don't know. I suspect, as you say, there'll be a bit of perspective on it by the next fortnight or so. Mm.
What about, you know, there's going to be an overheated manager market as well as a transfer market this summer. It seems that Roberto Martinez has completely lost the fans at Everton. Any way back?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the problem for Everton is they don't know what they should do at this point. You know, Martinez has been really good at some part of sort of his management, you know, the youth system, and which is pretty good anyway, you know, sort of improving that, and whether they should stick with that or whether they should look for an established manager. I mean, there's some mad names being thrown around in the past few weeks.
What about Rafa?
Well, Rafa would be perfect for him, wouldn't it?
You know, it's not too small a club for Rafa.
Yeah, I think at this stage, anyone in the Premier League is good enough, but you know it'd be the sort of perfect environment where he could go in, organise them. There's enough good players there. There's a youth system, and improve them. I think he's probably lost the fans already as well. So, but no, I'm not so sure Martinez will be sacked.
Really? Mm. What makes you say that?
Just there's a bit of indecision there, and Ken Wright doesn't like sacking his managers.
Mm. You know, already people are lining up, it seems. You know, we all know how they all play the game. And I thought it was really quite intriguing, let's put it like that, when Eddie Howe revealed himself to be a boyhood Everton fan. That's straight out of the Martinez playbook.
Straight out. Yeah, I mean, I know Ken Wright, he's a huge fan of Martinez, isn't he? But I also know he really likes Eddie Howe, and it's someone that he's been keeping tabs on over a long period of time. I think that it's a massive decision for them to make, and I don't think, you know, I think they've probably got a couple of weeks now where they need to sit down and decide before they start pushing the boat out on any transfers or pushing through any targets, you know, which manager are we going to be doing this with? And everything that I've heard about any potential successor to Martinez, if he does go, is that they want someone with Premier League experience. So even now, you know, we've been hearing the likes of Quique Sanchez Flores, his name thrown in, Mark Hughes, as you say, Eddie Howe. So
Frank de Boer's sort of come on.
Frank de
Boer
is desperate for it, isn't he? I think he's been throwing his name out there, but whether or not they was entertained that, I don't know.
No, it'll be someone who's managing the Premier League.
Yeah. If you look around the other clubs, you know, we mentioned Quique Sanchez Flores doesn't look long for this world at Watford. There's a sense that maybe Tony Pulis might have run his race at West Brom. What about you've got Ronald Koeman? You know, there's a sense of restlessness there. Is there going to be a lot of turmoil in the market this summer?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at someone like Koeman, I think he'll look at the situation, and unless there is an obviously better job around, I think he'll stay put. You know, I think there'll be a little bit less than, you know, perhaps it looks on the face of it. I mean, Pulis at West Brom, I suppose him and Jeremy Peace never looked like the perfect match anyway. But again, where would he go to? You know, he'd probably have to take a trip down into the Championship. You know, so I think there'll be a lot of people who are not quite happy. I think best stay put, especially with the, you know, the sort of the extra money that's in the Premier League, and there'll be bigger transfer budgets.
Anywhere else that you can see, Tom?
I don't know. It'd be fascinating with Manchester United, really, won't it? I mean, that's the big one as to whether Mourinho comes in. And I mean, Mourinho's absolutely adamant he's got the job, but Van Gaal seems equally as convinced that he's going to be around next season as well. And I think that could be the one that really sets the tone for every other club.
Van Gaal is interesting because he's always been completely, you know, sort of straight down the line, I'll be here next year. Except after the semi-final, there was a little bit of a doubt about him. When asked about next year, he said, you know, you have to ask the boards about that, it'll be their decision. And I wonder whether he's beginning to doubt it. But if they qualify for the top four and win the cup, it's going to be impossible to get rid of them.
Well, it's not. I don't think it is, because I still think it's papering over the cracks of what has not been a good season by Manchester United standards at all.
But that's a football man talking about a football decision. Man United isn't run by a football man.
I was about to say. I said that's a rational view of it, but Ed Woodward has a different view. And, you know, I don't think any of us has a great deal of respect for his decision-making in football matters. And, you know, I could see Van Gaal being there next season.
We'll see. I'm not convinced by that, I have to say. I mean, look, again, you could see him being there, but I just don't think it would be the right decision.
For
all this talk about, I've brought through the kids, I've given youth a chance at Old Trafford, he's given them a chance because he's had no other option because of the injuries that have taken place.
It's the last throw of the dice. and you go double six. You know, it's and you know, there is no way that this is a coherent strategy. So yeah, I mean, you're 100% right. It's madness for United to keep him. But, you know, it was madness for United not to sack him at Christmas.
Talking of madness, how mad is it that we've got this prospect of Manchester City failing to qualify for the Champions League for Pep Guardiola?
Well, it's funny in its own way. You know, it's not funny at the Etihad, as I should imagine. But it's astounding with that squad. I mean, and it just shows the whole... you know, people are talking about Pep in Munich and saying he was a failure there. Was he a failure? You know, so he won titles and all that. So semi-finals of the Champions League. I think we can say the Pellegrini experiment there, even though they won the league and even though they won League Cups, is an absolute failure. You know, it was probably a good idea to bring him in when he arrived, so to calm things down after the madness of Mancini. But it probably would have made sense to keep him there for 2 years and then move him on. And in the second of those years, last season, they should have revamped that squad. They should have had a clear out. Yaya Toure should have been, you know, sent as far away as possible from Manchester, and get, you know, sort of, because the spending power they've got, and they've got a good squad. They've still got a good squad, but you know, I've never seen a team with so many good players switch off so often.
You're absolutely right about him being brought in, Pellegrini, to restore a bit of calm after Mancini, but calmness doesn't win trophy after trophy. You know, sometimes you need a manager with Mancini's desire, his devilment, his belligerence to kick the team where they need to be kicked and in the direction they need to be shoved in to get the best out of them. And I mean, for them to be in the semi-final of the Champions League last midweek, and for, well, certain estimates between 5,000 and 10,000, the maximum number who stayed behind to applaud Pellegrini for what he's done, winning a, you know, the league title in one of 3 years, winning the Capital One Cup as it was, you know. I just think that's extraordinary that more people didn't stay behind.
Does that suggest to you, Tom, that there's apathy on the pitch and off it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of real disappointment at City at what might have been. You know, as we say, only a fortnight or so ago, fans were beginning to wonder if Pellegrini would wave them goodbye, holding the European Cup aloft, and of course that failed. So of course there's a little bit of disappointment from that. But I mean, you look at the likes of Toure. I remember I was up at Villa about a month ago, 5 weeks ago, and Toure was struggling to unlock Villa in the first half. There was no spark in the side. Silva had lost that little bit of creative edge, and it was only when De Bruyne came back from his injury that the side really sparked again and got into life. And of course they seem to be drifting towards the end of the season now, don't they, rather than absolutely driving for it, which of course under Mancini and under Pellegrini they did to begin with.
How many survive? If you look at it, you know, we're hearing a lot of talk that Pep doesn't fancy Joe Hart. You know, talk of Ter Stegen coming in from Barcelona. De Bruyne's been terrific. Aguero, terrific. And who else?
Well, who else indeed? Because you look at the way they've played, there's not many that you'd want to keep there, is there? I mean, the bonus for him is that he's got De Bruyne, and, you know, and that's fantastic. Sterling, you know, who hasn't had the greatest of seasons, but you'd think, you know, it can improve. He's got, you know, Fernando and Fernandinho. Yeah, probably. I think need two new centre-halves.
We could even need three now with Kompany as well. This latest injury, 4 months out. I mean, his injury record has never been great, but this season, you know, you feel for him so much. But you know, Otamendi hasn't proved himself Manchester City quality. He's probably had a better season this season. Mangala has never been Manchester City quality. And with Kompany injured. But even left and right back, you know, you're looking there of Zabaleta, Kolarov. They've seen better days now. Is it time to move them on? So Guardiola could be coming in and looking at having to have a whole new defensive unit, you know, 5, 6, 7 players, including the keeper, and players to play regularly across the back four.
Well, you know, people talk about Guardiola, you know, so say, oh, he's never really had to do a building job. You know, he's got fully formed clubs. Well, now he's he's going to build this.
Yeah. What would represent success for him then in that context next season? Will we be under immediate pressure to start winning things?
Well, I think people will expect that. I think a realistic expectation would be the top four, you know, a cup and a long run in the Champions League. Well, certainly the knockout rounds of the Champions League. I think they're a long way from being a title contender. And when you look at the, you know, sort of what's happened this year, there's quite a few teams that appear at this stage better equipped to get into that top four.
Arsene Wenger made a really good point that we almost need to change our thinking. You know, there's no longer an elite established top four. It's a lot more democratic now, or meritocratic. Okay, Leicester, you know, the unbelievables have won the title. But is there a germ of truth in what he was saying?
I think he's probably hiding behind that a little bit. I think there is still very much an established top four. I still think when we all sit down to write our predictions at the start of next season, it'll be a brave man who doesn't say that a Manchester United, a Manchester City, an Arsenal or a Chelsea will win the title. It's not to say that we'll be right, but you're still, at the moment, given that we know they've all got so much money anyway, and given this influx of money that's going to come in, they're going to be able to be offering players £300,000 a week plus. You know, this is astonishing sums of money. Whereas the likes of Leicester, yes, they've won the Premier League this year. Yes, they're going to make probably £200 million from their achievements this time out. They're still going to be offering players £50,000, £60,000, £70,000 a week, because there's no guarantee that they're going to achieve the same as they have done next season. So I still think for now that there is very much an established top order, and I think that's probably, there might be five or six teams in it rather than just a top four, but I think Wenger's probably using it to hide behind a little bit.
I'll slightly disagree with Tom there, because I think the new deal, the money coming in, means that the teams in the Premier League don't have to be financially bullied by the big four like they used to be. Basically, they can, to a certain extent, compete with wages, but more to the point, they can outspend everyone else except Real Madrid, Barcelona, PSG and Bayern Munich, only arguably Bayern Munich. And so they'll have, the Premier League will have the pick of the world's players, essentially, apart from those other clubs, which gives, sort of...
But still, the clubs with the richest owners are still getting... They're still being given the same amount of TV revenue as the smaller clubs,
aren't they? Proportionally, they're still... But you know, as I say, that makes them less susceptible to being financially bullied.
What about internal transfers, if I can use that term? Daniel Sturridge, you know, he's adamant that he's happy at Liverpool, thinks they're on the verge of special things. Still a lot of talk about him going to Arsenal.
Yeah, and this has been bubbling away, not necessarily the Arsenal link, but it's been bubbling away that he fancied a return to London for some time, hasn't it? I mean, there's no chance of him going back to Chelsea, because I still think there are one or two people in positions of power there who weren't best pleased with the way he left that time. So, you know, looking at it, you know, Spurs are definitely in the hunt for a striker. Pochettino told us as much at his press conference on Friday, so whether that might be a viable option for Sturridge as well. But, I mean, you could see him fitting into Arsenal, and they are, as much as I like Giroud and think he gets a very bad press, Arsenal are crying out for someone to shoulder the burden of goals with him.
What does Spurs need to take that last final step to becoming champions?
Well, I mean, they do need another striker, but I think more importantly, they need some leadership. One of the things about Pochettino, one of the worries about Pochettino is that he wants a young group who'll do everything he says, won't question him. And essentially, that works fine. They do the two-a-day training sessions and everything's good. On the pitch, though, there are not many leaders there. There are not many strong characters. The only two, really, are Dele Alli and Eric Dyer. And they're both very, very young. And, you know, against Chelsea, Ali was missing and Dyer lost his head completely. And at a time when, you know, when they were 2-1 up against Chelsea pulled that goal back, they needed someone with experience, say, okay, someone who'd been there before, let's calm it all down. The only one with any experience really is Lloris, and he's in goal, so it doesn't really matter. I think they need someone with a bit of knowledge, a bit of nous, a bit of, you know, someone a bit older. The problem with young teams is they don't have leaders.
Also, you've got, you know, statistically, you look at it, Leicester, in the last 10 games, have picked up 24 points. Tottenham, in the same spell, have picked up 16. Now, you know, there's a lot of noises off. It's because of Pochettino's training methods and he's run them into the ground, etc., etc. I'm not sure I buy that. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, what's been fascinating with the way the season has ended for all those clubs is that just how far they've fallen behind Leicester City. You know, I think you look down to Arsenal. Are they 12 points plus or 12 points behind Leicester? City, 16 points, something like that. So, to be fair to Spurs, you know, at least they've kept on Leicester's coattails until, you know, it's only two games, really. A couple of games ago, we were still thinking there was a chance that they were going to take Leicester right to the end. So I think, you know, I think they deserve credit for everything they've done this this season. And I think Pochettino, I disagree slightly with Tony. I think Pochettino will look back on the season and say, actually, it was that defeat against Leicester which proved costly, and the four games at the start of the season where we drew rather than picking up. They lost the first one, didn't they? And then I think drew the next three, and that really has been the difference as to why they've not been title winners this time out.
West Ham, when the night after Leicester drew, and they had the chance to go top. And they look so tired just before the international break.
But every team has that at some stage, don't they? You know, and the difference is that Leicester, when they've looked a little bit tired this season, they've managed to eke out a draw or nicked it at the end. And you know, look, it's been an amazing story at Leicester, and I've been as happy as anyone to see it. But they have had their luck along the way, to win titles. You know, every team, who even the great Manchester United sides, have had that bit of luck, and perhaps that's one thing that has just.
You were there on Saturday, Tom. Yeah. Give us a sense of the atmosphere there. You know, everyone's written their colour pieces about it, but there's no substitute for actually being there.
It was bedlam. It's probably the best way to describe it. I mean, the journey down to the stadium from the train station was just incredible. You know, bunting hanging from every lamppost, and pictures of players hanging from lampposts as well, and horns pipping, and you know, the noise there, it was like being at a carnival. I think one of the papers described it as the Leicester Fiesta, didn't they? And it really was. It was astonishing. And it's a very multicultural city as well, Leicester. And one of the things you noticed was everybody was out celebrating. It really brought every community, every background together. And when you approached the ground, the first thing you saw was the fun fair, which was going on. You know, people walking around this fun fair dressed in pizzas in honour of Claudio Ranieri. These Italian voices you kept hearing all around. I think there were about 1,000 people had come over from Italy to support Ranieri as well. So it was an incredible day. And inside the stadium as well, the noise has been excellent all season. The atmosphere there has been, they've generated.
What, those clappers?
It's been great, yeah. Mm. What's interesting, if you think about Fulham with the clappers, it always sounds a bit twee, but Leicester have somehow managed to make it quite raucous with these little clackers. And when Bocelli was singing, I mean, it was just, you know, spine-tingling stuff to be there. And it is an absolute privilege to be there. You know, you think of the great sporting events that we've all been fortunate enough to cover, and that was one of them. And the noise when Morgan and Ranieri lifted the trophy was just, you know, it was ear-piercing. So, yeah, it's brilliant. And it was absolutely what they deserved for everything they've done this season.
Daft question, you know, probably not the first on this show. Ranieri's got to be manager of the year, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I think if there can't be any other candidates, you know, to win the league with Leicester. I mean, notwithstanding all we said about a bit of luck and all that sort of thing, it's just a remarkable achievement. Manager of the century.
Well, there was a lovely moment just as they were announcing the players onto the pitch and the management staff, and Ranieri was just stood in the tunnel, and as they were about to announce his name for him to come out to collect his medal, the man on the tannoy said, "You know, this man will never know quite what he's done for this city and for this football club," and just summed it up completely, because I don't think he ever will fully grasp and fully comprehend everything that he's done for Leicester.
Mm. We end the programme, Tony, please, by looking at, you know, almost like the direct opposite of the joy that you saw at Leicester, you know, the recurring, enduring tragedy of Hillsborough. Mm. The documentary which was shown on Sunday night has had a huge impact on people. You were there, you were in the documentary. Can you share your thoughts about where we are now and where you were then?
Then that day, I mean, you're in the middle of a nightmare. Most people had it worse than me, you know. So I was not in those pens, but I saw the carnage at close hands, and I saw at close hand the failure of the authorities, of the police and the ambulance services to help. And that has haunted me for the 27 years since. And more than anything, during the cover-up and the demonisation of people like me, you know, people would say to me all the time, you know, at nice dinner parties, middle-class dinner parties down south with my wife, they'd say, "Yeah, you're a Dillsbury, just admit it. You rushed the gates and you were all drunk." And it was always, you know, it was beyond comprehension that they could think that I did that. So it's nice for it to be resolved. But what most of all bothered me is that this was a huge public event, and the people who we should have relied on to keep us safe, the people we should have trusted, failed abjectly in the duties and then lied and threw the blame for 27 years. And one of the things that's driven me on is that this is not about football, it's not about Liverpool, it's not about me. And what it is, it's about public safety. And it's about being able to trust the authorities to take responsibility for their own failings. And I think that's just such a bigger issue than just football. And I think that's what we're resolving now. And I think for the families, I think it's wonderful to have the truth.
All of us have been privileged to meet those families. I've been touched, almost scarred by their defiance and their generosity of spirit and the way that they fought together. You've seen them more than most. Do they feel they've got closure now?
I don't think it's closure. I think it's way off closure. I think those who were responsible need to accept that in a court of law. And will there ever be complete closure? No, I think what was lost on that day was too big for it ever to be resolved. But I think once people finally... Once the law takes its full course, as it should have done 27 years ago, I think it'll be a lot closer to closure. Will it ever end for any of us? No. You can't unsee things.
We have the truth, but do we have justice? You decide. Thanks for joining us.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.